Howdy, howdy, howdy do, who fans, welcome to the Big Blue Box Podcast. My name's Gary.
My name's Adam.
And welcome to episode 278.
Yes, indeed.
One day, I shall come back. Yes, I shall come back. Until then, there must be no regrets, no tears, no anxieties. Just go forward in all your beliefs and prove to me that I am not mistaken in mine.
Our lives are different to anybody else's. That's the exciting thing. Nobody in the universe can do what we're doing.
I've reversed the polarity of the neutron flow, so the TARDIS should be free of the force field now.
You may be a doctor, but I'm the doctor. The definite article, you might say.
But the trouble with time travel is, one never seems to find the time.
Change, my dear. And it seems on a moment too soon.
Unlimited rice pudding, etc., etc.
I am the doctor!
For now, for this moment, I am the doctor again.
The ground beneath our feet is spinning at 1,000 miles an hour. And the entire planet is hurtling around the sun at 67,000 miles an hour. And I can feel it. We're falling through space, you and me.
People assume that time is a strict progression of cause to effect. But actually, from a non-linear, non-subjective view, more like a big ball of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff.
I could be a curator. I'd be great at curating. I'd be the great curator.
I could retire and do that.
I'm the doctor. I've lived for over 2,000 years, and not all of them were good. I've made many mistakes, and it's about time that I did something about that.
Bit of adrenaline, dash of outrage, and a hint of panic knitted my brain back together. I know exactly who I am. I'm the Doctor. Sorting out fair play throughout the universe.
Howdy, howdy do, Who fans. Welcome back to the Big Blue Box Podcast, episode 278. Hope you're all well, keeping safe. You've had a cracking week. And if you all managed to do something, Doctor Who related.
Yeah.
Indeedy. Bit rainy today, bud, in the UK.
Oh,
bit of a change.
A little bit gloomy, isn't it? A little bit gloomy out there.
I'm loving it, mate.
Are you?
Yeah. For the past 2 weeks, it's been like gloriously warm and hot, which is nice. But the problem is, unless you've got a pool and a bar, swim-up bar and a sun lounger, it's kind of wasted, really. Stuck in the office, just staring at a screen while it's lovely weather outside.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, there was a couple of days last week where I just stood still for 10 seconds. I started to sweat. So I sort of cooled myself off, got the fan on, turned it off, 10 seconds, started to sweat, and it was just unbearable. So now this weather's kind of cool. It's not cold at all. It's just kind of grey and rainy. And
It's
definitely
classic
cool,
British weather, isn't it? Classic British weather.
Yeah.
Like I say, I know what you mean. It's been intense the last couple of weeks. So this is quite a nice break from it. But I love a good storm. I love a thunderstorm.
I love a thunderstorm.
I love a storm. And I kept seeing all these people on Facebook saying, oh, look at these, look at this lightning, look at this thunder, look at this rain downpour. And I was waiting for it. I was like, yeah, I can feel it. It's so warm. I can feel that there's a storm coming. And there was a great day when I stood outside. I could almost feel it whirling around me. It was incredible. And it just never happened. I was just like, it felt like it just missed our part of the country. I was like, where's this blimmin' storm? We may still get it, but God, I love a thunderstorm. But only, well, when I'm inside, I don't like being out with it, but I love being inside and just, crash, bang, wallop.
Indeedy.
Yeah. But today it's just a bit grey. I'm looking out and waiting for Doctor Who magazine to arrive. Just because when I look out my window, I just stare straight at our gate. I keep thinking, where's that postman? Where's that magazine? Because it should be, it's supposed to officially come out tomorrow, but it normally comes a day early. I see people posting on Twitter, and I'm like, right, where's mine? Come on. Where is it?
FOMO, fear of missing out.
Yeah, I need to get there before he rolls it in a ball and shoves it through the letterbox. Come on, where is it? But it's got Mr. Baker on the front this week, Mr. Tom Baker. So,
Mr. Tom.
He's been trending on Twitter, but I can't remember the reason why.
Tom Baker or the postman?
Yeah. No, not the postman, no. No, Tom Baker has been trending on Twitter yesterday. It was everyone was posting photos of him. I was getting a bit worried. It's like, oh, why is everyone posting their pictures with Tom? What's happened? But he's fine and well, thank goodness. But yeah, I don't know what the reason was. Just having a look now.
Yeah.
No, maybe there was no reason.
No, I didn't see any. I didn't see any posts about Tom. Mm. Hold on, I've just as we're recording, so I have Twitter open because I read our listeners' reviews out. There's a tweet that just popped up. It said, after the initial panic, the great thing about seeing Tom Baker trending is that your timeline gets filled with lots of Tom Baker.
Yeah.
So I wonder what he's up to then, to be trending.
Yeah. Hmm. It could be a Big Finish thing, possibly. Don't know.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows?
Talking of Tom and Big Finish, this is the only Doctor Who thing I've done this week, Doctor Who related thing I've done this week, is I did feel like I needed to dive into a bit of Big Finish. I felt like, you know, I've neglected it a bit last sort of few months, and I thought I've got so much there that I haven't listened to. So I thought, yeah, I've got the Series 9, Fourth Doctor Adventures, which is, you know, the Fourth Doctor, Adric, and Romana too. I thought, oh, yeah, no, that's a good TARDIS team, and I don't listen to, you know, don't get that very often, so let's bung some of that on. And I listened to the first couple of episodes of Series 9, and I don't know what it was. I couldn't get into it. You know, sometimes this happens occasionally with Big Finish. I just couldn't quite get into the story. Like, Adric had been dropped off on a rock and was moaning, and, and yeah, I don't know, just two episodes in, I switched it off. I thought, no, I'm going to come back to that one. It just wasn't grabbing me, which is quite rare. I will go back to it because I'm sure it's good. I just maybe was in the mood. So I thought, right, if that's not grabbing me, I'll go for a bit of Seven. And I put on a story called Subterfuge, which is a fairly recent one from the monthly range. Hmm. So it's the Seventh Doctor. It's got Ian McNeice's Winston Churchill and Rufus Hound playing the Meddling Monk. And I thought, you know, that just to me, it sounded, I thought I need something a bit fun. This Fourth Doctor one's just not really... don't know, it's just not really doing it for me. So I need something with a bit of humour in it. And this one didn't disappoint, actually. This was really good fun. I don't know if you listened to it. I think this one of our writers may have done a review. But
yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've not listened to it, though. No.
It's good. It's kind of exactly what I was expecting. So, you know, you've got, like, obviously McCoy and Rufus Hound just bounce very nicely off each other. And Ian McNeice's Churchill is great on audio. I mean, he really works well. So... yeah, I enjoyed that. I won't go into any spoilers or anything, but it was just a good, fun listen, like a fun story. So,
yeah, cool.
So a bit of Big Finish this week, but that really is all I've done Doctor Who related, because obviously Armageddon Factor that we're reviewing today, six-parter, so that's taken up a bit of time.
Right, Christ.
Yeah, I watched it at 3 and 3. I don't know about you. I watched 3 episodes and then the other 3. I didn't watch it all in one go.
Okay. No, 4 and 2 for me.
4 and 2. Yeah, okay. Good to know. But yeah, that's been pretty much it for me this week, I'm afraid. Not much going on.
Yeah, no worries, mate. Yeah, I've done very little. I've watched another classic Who. That was at the weekend, though. It's a bit of a quiet weekend. So we were mocking, is it Philip Maddock in the last review? Is it Philip Maddock? Maddock? Douglas Maddock?
Philip Maddock, yeah.
Philip, that's it. Yeah, so a bit of Morbius action, a bit of Brain of Morbius.
Oh, well, he's superb in that.
He's superb in that.
It's hard to believe it's the same guy that's in Krull, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think we were bang on with our review last week, where he was just bummed out about not having the part that he initially went for, and was relegated to the person that wasn't meant to be grumpy, I don't think, but just turned it into a bit of a grumpy, bored old soul. So, yeah, a bit in Morbius, though. He's awesome. He's such a different change of direction for his acting.
I said in our review, he's a great actor. It's just a shame to see him like that in Krull, because he's so good in everything else. I have watched Morbius many times, but I haven't watched it for quite a long time, if that makes sense. I haven't watched that one for a while.
Yeah,
but,
same.
It's one of my favourites, though. We have reviewed it, haven't we?
We have, yes.
Yeah. I absolutely love The Brain of Morbius. I think it's a great story. And the thing I do love about it is the interaction between Philip Maddock and Tom Baker. They're just so good in that story. Obviously, you got the Morbius creature. And, of course, now all the previous Doctors, was that going through your head while you were watching it? Were you thinking, oh, this has changed now?
I tried not to be honest. It did come into my mind initially, and I just pushed it away. Pushed it out. Yeah. I was like, oh, I can't be thinking about all that right now. You know, I'm having a good time enjoying some older, well, is it older or newer than this Key to Time? It's before this, and it's way before.
Yeah, it's Sarah Jane, isn't it? Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, so I was like, now I'm enjoying some old Tom, enjoying this story. I'm not going to think about all that.
Well, you like the bit at the very start, don't you? When the doctor's being all grumpy, and Sarah Jane's just having none of it. That's the bit you like, isn't it?
It's brilliant.
Yeah,
it's like a stroppy little teenager, and
yeah,
she's just cracking on, and then he kind of catches himself on after a little while and realizes that there's stuff to do. And, but up until that point, he's very funny. He's just a grumpy little sod.
I feel like watching it, actually. It has been a while. I might stick it on later, give it another watch.
Yes. Well, it was between that and Robot. And I thought, well, ooh, I don't know.
That's another good one.
Yeah. I'll tell you what makes that bloody BritBox app. It grabs you. Went on to Tom and it just lists out all these cool stories and thumbnails. And yeah, it was like, oh, that one. Oh, no. Oh, yeah, what about this one? Oh, I don't know. Hold on, there's this one. So, yeah, it's cool. So, yeah, I finished watching Morbius and that was it. And then on to, that was at the weekend. And then a couple of days ago and last night finished up the Armageddon Factor, ready for the big review, the wind down, the conclusion.
Yeah.
The summary.
Finally.
Yeah.
Finally finishing up the Key to Time. Feels like a year ago we started this season.
Right. It does, doesn't it? It feels like ages ago. Yeah.
It does, yeah.
But the review for Subterfuge, yes, we did review that. That was Jordan Shortman back on the 8th of April.
Yes, did he like it? Did he give it a good score?
Did he like it?
I think he did. I remember reading it at the time. I think he liked it.
Yeah. He says, while Subterfuge might not be the strongest Big Finish story for me to come out this year, it's still another audio that's incredibly easy to recommend.
Yes.
So, yeah. And then coming up, actually, might as well tell you what we've got coming up for reviews from those guys. So, our writing team. So, we've got Doctor Who Downward Spiral review. That's from Jordan. We've got Torchwood Save Our Souls. That's coming soon. And from Mark, we've got Crime Lord to Time Lord, Three Kinds of Heat.
Mm.
Which sounds interesting.
Yeah, it does.
So that's the a McCoy story, apparently.
Oh, right, okay.
Yes, and then coming up after that, probably next week, or maybe the week after, we've got some reviews on the monthly range. We've got number 265, The Lovecraft Invasion, which is a Sixth Doctor story. And then after that,
60.
Yep. And then after that, we'll have our review of the upcoming Davison story, Time Apart, which looks pretty good.
Yeah. Yes. I think I did see something about Davison's Doctor on Big Finish. Oh, no, I better not say it. I think it's a spoiler. I think they're doing something quite interesting with Davison's Doctor on Big Finish. They put a tweet out, but I won't say because I think it's a spoiler from the last story. There's quite a big thing happens at the end of the last one they've released, which I'm assuming is to do with this. Sorry, that I realised halfway through talking about this that I probably don't want to ruin this for anyone that doesn't know, so I'll just shut my trap. But let's just say, yeah, Davison on Big Finish is pretty good as well. I think McCoy's great. I think McCoy and Colin, though, are my two favourite Big Finish. They just really throw themselves into it and into their performance. I mean, Tom's obviously Tom. He's great, but I really always really enjoy listening to, like, Sylvan and Colin on Big Finish. Peter, as much as I like him, he's just always just a little bit flat somehow compared to those two. He's good. But he just, I don't know. Yeah, I don't know.
Oh dear.
I'm not going to say beige, like, so a bit beige. but
the colour of his outfit a little bit.
Yeah. But I like Peter on the TV. I know some people find him a bit beige. But
I'll tell you what, though, you're absolutely correct there, mate, with Sylvester McCoy and Colin Baker.
Yeah.
They just nail that. Well, pretty much most of the stories that I've listened to from those guys on Big Finish really are going for it. Even like the really early stuff, it's really going for it.
Yeah. I just listened to McCoy the other day on this one, Subterfuge. You can just hear it in his voice. He's just loving it. Mm. You know, he gets some really nice dialogue and he just works it brilliantly. On audio, yeah, and obviously he's got the rolling R's and all the stuff he does, and it's just great.
Regeneration. He probably goes for it, doesn't he? Yeah.
Oh, he does. Yeah.
Ah, Big Finish.
And of course, he was in the Hobbit films, of course. Let's not forget.
Of course, Radagast the Brown. Cracking character. One of the best things about the Hobbit films, really. And I say that with love. I don't say that while throwing shade. He really was good. But they are good, but you know. Yeah, he was good. Right, so that's what we've been up to for the past week. And before we crack on with the news, we've only got one bit of news, no merch this week, before we get on to our review of the Armageddon Factor. Before we get on to all that, head over to our website, bigblueboxpodcast.co.uk. You can listen to all of our shows on there. And like I said, you can you can read all of the reviews and articles that our team put out there. Jordan, Maria and Mark, those guys killing it as usual with their articles and reviews. Go and check that out. Remember to subscribe to our show as well on whatever podcast app you listen to your podcasts on. Just do a search for the Big Blue Box Podcast, or there's links on the website. And if you have a minute to leave a review and a rating, that would be awesome because that helps us out loads. We had a couple recently, so thank you very much to those of you that have left reviews recently. We have a free Discord server as well. The link to that is on the website. Come and hang out and chat Doctor Who over there. And remember to check out my co-host's channel over on YouTube, The Geek's Handbag.
Yes, I've finally got to grips with some new editing software, so I have started making new content. Which will probably be so out of date by the time I actually get to the end of watching the tutorial on this editing software. But yeah, I've started making new vids again. But there's plenty on there. Go and have a look at all the old stuff. There's loads to watch on my channel.
Indeedy. Yeah, go take a look. And Adam is on the socials too, under the same name, The Geek's Handbag. Go and give him a like and a follow. And we chat Doctor Who throughout the week. So come and get involved over there too. Right, shall we land it and do some news?
All right.
Doctor Who, Time Doctor Fracture.
Who.
Time Fracture, me old buddy, is that thing that we spoke about many, many weeks ago. Those of you that don't remember, you probably don't, because on the look on Adam's face, he doesn't remember either.
Rang a bell, but yeah.
Weeks and weeks ago, we told you that as part of the Time Lord Victoria storyline, they were going to implement multimedia stuff that's going to be books, audio, comics and all that stuff. And one of those things was going to be the immersive show. And if you remember weeks ago, we said that if you want to be able to book tickets early, you can purchase Gallifreyan coins so that you didn't have to wait in line when the general ticket goes on sale. So that event is now upon us. Well, the booking for it anyway. So, it's called Time Fracture, and it's by the company Immersive Everywhere. And yesterday they released some details about that, which is a new immersive theatrical event from the people that brought you The Great Gatsby, which is the UK's longest running immersive show, apparently. Yeah. So officially licensed by BBC, obviously. It will take place at Immersive Eye London, which is a former military drill hall dating back to 1890. And it will run from the 17th of February next year. And tickets will be available up to the 11th of April next year. And as I mentioned, if you got your Gallifreyan coins weeks ago, then that is now up for priority booking now. That went on sale. So that goes on sale tomorrow. But the time you listen to this, that would have been yesterday. And we'll put a link in the show notes to do that. And there's some blurb that comes with this. So it's 1940. It's the height of the Blitz. A weapon of unknown origin destroys a small corner of Mayfair and simultaneously opens up a rift in space and time. For decades, UNIT has fought to protect the people of Earth from the dangers it poses, but they've been beaten back as the fracture multiplies out of control. Earth, as we know it, is at stake. Now it's the time for you to step up and be the hero. Travelling to impossible places, confronting menacing monsters and ancient aliens along the way, it's a journey across space and time to save our race and our beautiful planet. Ooh. So it says, featuring the original story arc, you'll be invited to be immersed in a world of Doctor Who. Placed at the heart of the story, audiences will meet Daleks, Cybermen, Time Lords, and many other strange and mysterious characters. They travel across space and time. Blah, blah, blah. Time Fracture will allow guests to meet a character from Time Lord Victorious. Oh, okay, so that's the link. So one of the characters in the immersive show will be part of the wider Time Lord Victorious arc, which we spoke about. So I don't think the whole story is going to be based around that stuff, but they are going to link it in some way with one of these characters. Let's have a look. Doctor Who Time Fracture will take place whilst adhering to social distancing guidelines announced by the UK government this month. It will also be operating a no-questions-asked exchange policy where customers are no longer to attend and they can exchange their ticket, blah, blah, blah. General sale. So if you didn't get your coins, you can just go on general sale. That opens up 9 a.m. Thursday, so tomorrow, so yesterday for you guys listening. And tickets are just shy of 50 squids.
Wow.
Or 57 quid plus a booking fee. So it better be bloody worth it.
It better be good for quid. That price.
Yeah. It does sound pretty good. I mean, I'm still trying to get my head around what an immersive show is.
Same.
I'm trying to find out what the audience participation is in this sort of thing. I might have to do a bit of research into the this Great Gatsby show that they reference to see what that's like. But, you know, a Doctor Who themed show could be kind of cool, I suppose.
It does sound good. I'm like you. I'm not really very familiar with this immersive event type stuff. I'm sure there are people out there that have done them and know, but I'm the same as you. I don't really get like what part you play in it, but it does sound interesting. I like the poster that they've done for it with someone heading towards a TARDIS. It's got like the crack from Series 5 down the middle of it. And the person walking towards TARDIS has got a Fourth Doctor scarf on, which is nice. Units, you say? I thought they'd been disbanded with, done away with. So nice to see them back, even if it's just for an immersive game.
Yes.
It sounds interesting. I'm just a bit like you. I'm a little bit lost of exactly what it is. But for £57, I'd expect something pretty good.
Yeah, at least a drink or a lollipop or a T-shirt.
Something.
Where's my Doctor Who T-shirt? Well, we haven't got that your size. I'll bugger off.
And probably get like a key ring or something.
Yeah, I'm going home. I'm going home now.
When you get to the end of it, and here's your commemorative key ring and coin.
Yeah.
Now get out.
Because in my head about here's your key ring. Now beep off. In my head, I've got two things, and I can't seem to get rid of them. On one hand, I've got, it's just a bit like Butlins, you know, when you used to get called up on stage and used to pretend to be hypnotized and do all that rubbish. Or is it like who's the magician guy that does all those crazy mind tricks? Is it Daniel? What's his name? He does all like the crazy mind tricks. Darren Brown. Yeah. Is it that kind of thing where it's like just complete audience stuff, you know? So I don't know. Or are you watching like the equivalent as if you go to watch a West End show, but like the odd audience member just gets hoiked up on stage and you get to point a laser at a Dalek and that's your lot. Go on, bugger off. So I really don't know. It'd be interesting to find out. Yeah.
I was wondering if it's like a sort of like the escape room type thing where you go into different rooms and interact with it or something. I've really no idea.
Okay, so we'll put a link to the show notes for this stuff, and if any of you guys have got tickets or you've booked, let us know and just tell us what you think this is going to be like. And then lastly, if you go to the official Doctor Who YouTube channel, they've put like a kind of intro-y kind of video where there's one of the key characters from the unit side of things. He's kind of talking, he's doing like a report on the rift that's behind him. And there's another unit scientist there and they have a little bit of bants and then the rift kind of explodes towards the end and it looks kind of cool. So we'll link to that as well, but go and check that out. It might sway you to go and bag a ticket, maybe.
Mm.
Yes. Right, that's the only bit of news we've got. We have no merch this week, as we've said. So review time it is, dude. What do we got?
Yeah, so the final story in the Key to Time season, this one, the Armageddon Factor.
Area 6 obliterated.
Section 7, heavy damage.
District 10, no contact.
Level 14 holding.
Area 2, no contact.
Radiation levels indicate nuclear warfare in progress on planet surface.
What?
You, Doctor, had been foretold. Your coming had been foretold. You are the one who will lead us to victory.
I don't think I'm going to like this place very much.
Let's locate the 6-7 and get out of here.
The key to time is mine. You are in the belly of the shadow.
No!
You would have got away with it too if it wasn't for those pesky kids.
Those pesky kids. Ah, dearie, dearie. Right, the Armageddon Factor. Dude, we're here. We're at the end.
We've done it.
The end of the kit. Yeah, we've done it. Christ almighty. It feels good, though. It feels good that this year we've got the Trial of a Time Lord out the way. Out the way, it sounds like, you know. But anyway, and the Key to Time stuff, we've finally got there. So the Armageddon Factor. It was first broadcast back on the 20th of February to the 24th, back in 1979. It's a six-parter, this one.
Yeah.
It was written by Bob Baker and Dave Martin, directed by Michael Hayes. Stars Tom Baker and Mary Tam, John Leeson, the three regulars that we've seen throughout this series, and a relatively large-sized supporting cast for this one. So the final segment is at the heart of a devastating war between neighbouring planets Atreus and Zeos. The Doctor discovers that a sinister entity is manipulating the events at the cost of obtaining the final segment, and that might be more personal for him than he might have imagined. So, and the sixth segment turns out to be something they didn't expect at all. So I wouldn't say it was a twist, but it was definitely, So six parts of classic Doctor Who. What do you reckon, bud?
Yeah. So, you know, when we announced this last week, obviously, and I said to you, I don't remember anything about the story at all, apart from a big pair of silver headphones. Well, it turns out I got that wrong because I was thinking of Lala Ward in Warrior's Gate. I don't know why I thought that was part of this story. So it turns out I actually didn't remember a single thing about this six-parter at all, which is odd because I have watched the Key to Time season, you know, a few times over the years. I've gone through all the stories at least a couple of times, and I sort of have feelings in the back of my mind about each of them. So I always remember that I quite like Stones of Blood. I remember Kroll being a bit of a slog, but when it comes to Armageddon Factor, it's just like a void. It's just blank. And it was the same last week when we said, yeah, we're reviewing it. I was thinking, yeah, I just don't remember anything about that. And so I've watched all six parts again. As I said, I watched three parts and then another three the following night. And still can't really tell you anything about it. there's just not really much substance to it, I think. Being a six-parter at the end of this season, and you might think they would sort of ramp up the action and the story because it's the final segment of the Key to Time, and it's kind of all the focus is around that, so it's very central to the plot this time, this final piece, whereas before it's kind of just been in the background that they needed to get it, but they get embroiled in some other adventure. This one is quite key to the actual story, so really it should be quite an exciting sort of end of season blockbuster six-parter, really. And I know it's Doctor Who, so we don't expect anything too crazy, but this is pretty drab for a series final. It's not dreadful. It does have some nice moments, as with a lot of the stuff in the Key to Time, but it really feels a bit it feels like the budget's run out for a start. I mean, we thought the sets were bad in Kroll, but they're really gloomy and boring in this. I think they might be worse, to be honest. We were saying that the designer from Kroll got fired, didn't he, because his sets were so bad, but I'd argue that these sets are pretty bleak, and they reuse a lot of stuff from other stories. It's as if they've gone into the stock room and gone, I'll grab that funny computer looking thing from Space 1999 with the big wheels over there, and that dashboard from Blake 7 can come in, if Blake 7 had even aired then, probably not, but it just looks cobbled together. It's not very exciting on screen, and it doesn't help when the story isn't very exciting either. So I've got to admit, I struggled with this one a little bit. I've drifted out a lot, I'll be honest with you. it didn't really hold my attention particularly. I mean, there are fun moments in it. As I said, I don't think it's dreadful. It's got some good bits. You know, K-9 is, I don't think I've ever known him have so much to do in a story. You can tell it was written by Bob Baker and Dave Martin, because I am right in saying they created him, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
I think. So you can tell that they've really put him bang in the heart of the action. He gets loads to do. He almost gets incinerated at one point on the slowest conveyor belt in the universe, I think. So there are nice moments in it. Once again, Tom and Mary Tam really kind of hold this together for me. But yeah, not great. Just a bit middle of the road again. Just a bit of a flat finish to the season, really.
Mm.
What do you reckon?
Yeah, I'll read you, bud. It's
you the same page?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that sucks really, because I don't know, you would think that being the final story in the series, they would have really gone for it, ramped up all the action and done a lot. But maybe you're right, maybe the money just ran dry at this point. But even the script and stuff, and why the hell they did it over six parts, it's no idea. Maybe they had to make it six parts. Maybe they were commissioned for X amount of episodes in one series or something. I'm not sure, but you can tell like the padding is dreadful. Oh, like
so much padding,
and deliberate as well. Completely deliberate. A lot of it. Like there's quite a few scenes where they're walking around the set, and they take a little detour around a bit of a wall, which you know that. You know, come on, you know, that will add 7 seconds to the runtime. That's lovely. They walk around that bit. And then there's bits where, like you mentioned with K-9 on the conveyor belt on his way to the furnace, it's the camera's on him for like, you know, 10 seconds. He's already said his line, you know, but we just watch him slowly trundle along. There's no suspenseful music or anything to build up that he might be about to be incinerated, and it cuts back. And so things like that is just loads of padding. And sometimes with some classic stories, you can tell that the padding is unintentional. It's just the script has been written that way, and the way it's been directed, it's just unfortunate that it just feels that way. But in this story, and we had it back with the... what was the one before The Power of Kroll? It was it the Androids of
Androids of Tara?
Yeah. That one as well was another culprit, where you can just tell that they're deliberately just keeping the camera on people while they're doing sort of mundane things, like just walking down a corridor. You know, that can be done like bosh, 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 right? He's down the corridor. But they just sort of train the camera on that person. It's completely static and it just follows him very slowly. It does something, and then somebody else walks down the corridor and around the loop, and yeah. So the padding stuff, it just makes it feel like a real slog. I mean, six parts for this one, crikey!
You mentioned the word loop there, and I mean, gosh, if you're talking padding, that time loop bit from episode 4.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, my word, that is. I mean, you actually do feel like you're stuck in a time loop at one point when you keep seeing the ship come towards you and it's got that sound effect on it. It keeps going. And I was fire. Oh, please. fire. And the slowest hand movement ever to the fire. But and it goes round and round. So the thing is, if you read the synopsis now, it sounds like this, you know, it should be more exciting. There's some good stuff going on. You've got the war between the planets. One of them's hiding the mysterious shadow guy, you know, the Black Guardian popping up at the end, the final segment of the, you know, the key, that there's stuff there to work with, but it just doesn't really get utilized very well. I mean, the Black Guardian is only in it for like 2 minutes right at the end, and Valentine Dahl's so brilliantly evil as the Black Guardian. I was thinking, god, why didn't you know, okay, do your 4 episodes of that, but if you're gonna sustain this for another 2, bring in the Black Guardian, get him in there. You know, we've had enough of the Scooby-Doo shadow guys. I mean, he gets boring very quickly. He does a ridiculously cackling laugh, and that's all he really does.
Who, the shadow?
The shadow,
William,
yeah.
Squire.
So, you know, get pushed into one side. Let's get the Black Guardian involved in the storyline, because it's just a waste of Valentine Dahl. He's, you know, he's brilliant as the Black Guardian, but he's hardly in it.
Mm-hmm.
I know we get to see him later in what's the Davison story? Mordred Undead and all that. So we do get to see him a bit more later, but totally wasted. And I think it would have really helped to, you know, carry the interest across the six parts, really, if he'd come into it a bit sooner, or they did something with him, I think, you know. Because yeah. I love that. I actually really liked the last 5 minutes or so with the Doctor, where they're in the TARDIS and the Doctor's all like, you know, I have the key to time. What if I decided he's, you know, being stupid, but you think he's gone crazy for a minute with power, don't you? But he's actually just saying, well, of course I haven't, but what if I did? And that's all really good fun. And then you've got him messing around with the Black Guardian saying, you know, oh, shall I give it to you now? And all that comedic stuff. Great. Last 5 minutes is brilliant. But yeah, where was all that earlier on, you know?
Yeah, no, I completely agree, mate. The it would have been great to have the Guardian in it for longer.
Yeah,
at least throughout the final, like as a cliffhanger to episode 5, would have been great for him to pop up.
Yeah,
as in like the story to the viewer is like, oh, there's something not quite right. We thought that he was the good guy, the White Guardian, but now this is a little bit dodgy. But from a character point of view, from a Doctor and stuff, they just think he's the White Guardian. And so the final episode could have been about that realization that actually he's not the White Guardian, and he's after the key to time for his own ends and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think you nailed it, mate. It's just a complete waste. He's in it for literally, I think it's 2 minutes, like 2 and a bit minutes.
Yep.
Yeah. No.
It would have been a good game changer, that, wouldn't it? I agree with you. It would have been a really good game changer, because they do bring in this character of Drax in episode 5, don't they? So you get this new character in episodes 5 and 6, which sort of adds something to it, but it does seem a bit out of nowhere, and it doesn't feel very natural at all. It's just I don't know. Whereas if you'd have had the Black Guardian in it, that would have totally fitted with the story. If he'd have sort of come in and said, right, you know, the Shadow's done his work and now I'm taking over, or like you said, he pretended to be the White Guardian but suddenly revealed, no, I'm the Black Guardian, oh, you know, it would have been, yeah, it would have been quite good, I think. But because I'm sat here now and I honestly can't think of like what happened over those 6 episodes, really. I'm really struggling to think. So I sat and watched 6 episodes or 2, but what happened in those 6 episodes? The princess got captured. She's the 6th segment. What else happened? K-9 nearly got burnt.
Yeah.
I'm not even being facetious. I'm really struggling to think what happened in this story. You know, time loop. We got this funny computer in the middle of the floor that's supposed to be all powerful and blows up.
Well, that's it. I think the crux of the story is meant to be about the war between Atreus and Zeos.
Yeah.
But we know that that I think it's Zeos where the Shadow dude has been kind of manipulating it from or somewhere, and that's how the story's set up anyway, and the Doctor kind of gets involved in that because the Marshal, he's like, well, if you build me this force field, then sure, yeah, I'll help you find the princess and all that stuff. But then it slowly just descends into, when you get, well, definitely as you get into part 4, it just descends into a bit of a wander around, if that makes sense. There's not any big threat. I never felt at any point that the Doctor and Romana were under any kind of big threat. Even the bits when they were caged in, you know, the little electrocution pods, and they were getting electrocuted and stuff. Even that didn't really bother them too much because they were in there. They got electrocuted for about 3 seconds, and then they were like, "Right, let them out. Right, you don't do that again." And they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then they run off and do something else. And so, yeah, there isn't any of that good old, like, you know, like the good old formulas that some people refer to Classic Who as a bit boring. But, you know, you've got the escape and capture formula that works quite well. They did it loads in Troughton's era. Or the base under siege. There's none of those kind of classic formulas, really. It's all just a bit, like you, mate. Like you said, afterwards you just think, well, I kind of remember what happened for a few things, but overall, I can't really remember or kind of get my head around what story they were trying to tell. It was almost like, is this a story about the key to time? and about the Princess Astra and turning into the segment and all that jazz? Or is it about the war that's happening between the planets and this kind of delusional Marshall character who's just seemingly throwing all of his troops to the, you know, to the slaughter just because he doesn't want to lose face, sort of thing? Or is it about the White Guardian? Like, can't really be about him turning out to be the Black Guardian, because like we said, he's only in it right at the very end.
Yeah.
Or is it about this shadow character? You got all these kind of things going on, but it can't really make up its mind what bit it wants to focus on. Like, what's the main thread of the story? I'm not talking about the arc, the key to time, but just the Armageddon factor. It's like, what's the main thread here over the six parts? And it's
quite messy, isn't it?
Yeah, it is messy.
I know what you mean. Like, you've got some good elements there, haven't you? But it just doesn't, like you said, it doesn't flow in a way that really keeps you interested. Like the Marshal you mentioned, he's quite interesting to begin with because he's, you think he's sort of hypnotized or something. He's got this weird thing going on where he keeps facing the wall and he's kind of zones out and you're thinking, what's up with him then? You know, so there's something mysterious there, but that kind of gets thrown away pretty quickly. There's this weird skull behind a door, isn't there, which he's sort of talking to.
Yeah, I think that was the communication device from the shadow character. That's what I took from that.
Well, I've got to be honest, that's one of the bits where I zoned out a bit because I suddenly thought, oh, there's a skull. What's this? I must have just drifted a bit because I wasn't entirely sure what was going on there. I probably should have gone back and rewatched it. But yeah, you're right. It's just a bit messy. Like, you know, they've got some good ideas popping up. And obviously, you know, you've got Lala Ward coming in as Princess Astra. She's got quite a big part to play in this. And at first, I found it quite odd seeing her playing a different part. I was like, oh, it's Romana. This is weird. Like, you know, Romana, you get the two on screen together. So you get her and Mary Tam thinking, oh, it's about two Romanas. But I don't know if you agree, but I actually thought Lala Ward played Astra quite well. Like, I didn't feel like, I know she's playing this before she played Romana, so obviously she would change the character, but I thought the performance was very different. You know, I felt like she was quite good in it. I like the bit where she's in the TARDIS so she can't stop staring at the key and she's just acting really strange. The Doctor's just like, what's going on with her? He can't work out what it is. And so I quite like Lala Ward in it. I think that's one, because I'm trying to find it. I haven't got a lot of positive to say. And as you know, I always try and find, but you know, good and bad in every story. But yeah, I liked Lala Ward in it. It took me a couple of minutes really just to sort of get the fact that she's not Romana out of my head. It's like, no, she's not. That isn't even a thing at the minute. This is, you know, Princess Astra.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. I mean, it's no surprise. I don't know if you watched, you probably have, but the special features on this story. There's one all about Mary Tam. It's like a bit of an interview and some other clips and whatnot.
I probably watched it at the time. Yeah. I didn't watch it this time round.
Well, she basically said it was while she was filming, you know, this sort of last half of the Key to Time stuff that she decided, nah, this is not for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was while she was doing this, she was like, yeah, I just kind of made my mind up now. This is Doctor Who's just not for me. And it's a shame, really, because I think if they had better stories and better scripts, she may have stayed on. Because I think one of the things that has been cool throughout The Key to Time, and this one's no exception, is that although Tom hasn't, we haven't seen like the best of Tom, that we, you know, this isn't his best performance across his era, it's certainly not bad at all. And the relationship between him and Mary Tam have been really good for the most part. There's been a couple of episodes where we thought, where's the spark gone that we've seen? But it does come back to a degree. So really, I think the highlight for me for this story and The Key to Time is Tom and Mary, especially Mary. She's such a good companion and very, very much, very often overlooked by Lala Ward's Romana, I think, which is a shame because I really, like, as we've gone through it, I've just really liked her character. She's been a great companion.
Yeah, I'd absolutely agree with that. I totally, I'm totally guilty of overlooking Mary Tam as Romana because I just associate the part so much with Lala Ward. She is great in it. I feel she's been let down in the last couple of stories, and I'm not surprised to hear that she felt like she was going to move on because she doesn't really get a lot to do. She didn't get hardly anything to do in the last story. she doesn't really get a lot to do in this one. I mean, she gets a couple of nice moments with Tom again, which is good. But yeah, I definitely feel like she was a little bit wasted. I would like to have seen another season with her. Having said that, I do really like the fact that Lala Ward comes back next season, you know, as a different character. It's an odd move. It's quite an odd move. I don't quite know how it happened. I'll have to watch, because it's Destiny of the Daleks kicks off the next season, and she's Romana from that. From what I remember, like, Romana just keeps coming out with different faces at the beginning or something, and then she comes out looking like Princess Astra, and the Doctor says something like, "You can't do that. You can't take that face." And she's like, "Why not?" And so she keeps that face. That's how I remember it. So it's an odd move, isn't it, to sort of say, "Oh, come back in the first or the next season. You can be a totally different character, but don't worry, because you know you're going to be playing the Time Lord, so we can get away with it." I think it's a really interesting move in terms of the production team. Yeah. I think that's how it happens. I need to watch Destiny of the Daleks to confirm that, but that's how I remember it in my mind, is that it comes back to what Moffat did with Peter Capaldi's Doctor, doesn't it? That he steals the face.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I think that's kind of what they do with Lala Ward, with Romana, sorry, is that she takes the form of Princess Astra's face or something like that.
That's right. Yeah. I think she does like three or four different versions.
I seem to remember she walks out as like a really tall lady or something, and then she's something else.
She's really
short. Yeah. I feel like watching it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a bizarre, strange move for that.
It does work, though. I will say that. I mean, it does work. I think they both. I do love the fact that we get to see two different versions of Romana, but I definitely would have just liked to have seen a bit more of Romana 1, if you like.
Yeah.
She was good, yeah.
She was good. Mm. Old Romana. Romana.
Romana. Yeah.
Yeah, so Tom is really, really good in this, as he has been for the most part. Like I said, I think there's probably about, I don't know, a dozen stories throughout his era which are better than this. But that's not his fault. I think that's down to the script and the writing to an extent. But he's certainly not bad at all. And he's in most of the episodes, he's carrying this story, I would say. And Romana is part of that. Mary Tam, she's done. She's just really, really cool. Especially when they're funny together. Those bantery moments and stuff are really cool. You mentioned another character, which was really bizarre to me.
What, Drax?
Drax, yeah. This kind of
all right, mate. All right, Governor. I'm from Brixton.
I've been in Brixton, Nick. Innit, we're in Nick now together. It's. I just found that very perplexing.
Where does he come from?
Yeah, it's like, am I right in thinking, dude, that, or was this a more modern Doctor Who thing? But I thought that the Doctor, with the exception of a companion in this case, Romana, was meant to be like the last of the Time Lords. Is that a modern? Is that more of a modern thing?
Yeah.
It was kicked off with Eccleston, right? Okay.
Yeah.
But it still perplexed me a little bit because, like, they've always written the Doctor as this loner character, with the exception, I'm taking the companions out of the equation, in terms of other Time Lords, he's always this loner character. And then out the blue, all of a sudden, quite conveniently, there's this dude that turns up who's another Time Lord, and they were like old school chums, like buddies back in the day and stuff. And I don't know, the Doctor just doesn't seem to be that surprised to see him.
No, that's right. I think I was more surprised. I thought I'd zoned out again. I was thinking, oh, what? Hang on, where's this guy come from?
Yeah.
You know, thinking bizarre. I'd missed something. But he does just literally just walk onto set and be, all right, mate, oh, hey, it's me old mate, Theta Sigma. How are you doing? Oh, yeah, it's new for a while. I'm like, what? You know, and I do find that interesting that he names the Doctor Theta Sigma. I like that little anomaly. Like, you know, gives that Doctor the name. It's, you know, just where does that come from? I don't think we hear that in any other story as far as I'm aware, but I like that. But yeah, who is this guy? Like, why is he randomly on this, you know, rock, and what is he doing there? It's just odd.
It is weird, isn't it?
I've got to say, it's down to the writing, isn't it? It's just like, right, we need to introduce this character and, you know, let's just throw him in there. It's just too random, really. The way he just suddenly appears, he should have been brought in earlier on or something.
Yeah, I mean, it would have been cool if like if he was just a person that the Doctor had randomly met on a previous adventure or something, that would have made more sense to me. But the fact that he was a Time Lord, and like he had all his equipment, didn't he? He had all these spare parts, all his equipment. And even the Doctor says to him, you should have repaired this and been out of here long ago.
Yeah.
But he, I don't know. He's just this. Yeah. And they kind of tried to make him a bit more human-like as well, didn't they? By saying that because he had turned up on Earth and got thrown in Brixton prison, that's why he's got that kind of London Cockney accent. And the whole thing was just bizarre. It was.
It could have been more bizarre though, because I remember the actor, what's his name? Barry Jackson.
Barry Jackson, yeah.
He says in the little making of on the DVD that he read in the script he was going to have this big red hair. And he thought, oh God, I can't wait. That's going to be fun. I'm going to get a big red wig to wear. That's going to be brilliant. And he said he was sat there, you know, getting made up and, right, where's the wig then? Waiting for the wig to come on. And apparently, I think it was Bob Baker or whatever, just said, oh, no, we're not bothering with that. He was like, oh. And so he was a bit disappointed, I think. But that would have made it even more bizarre, wouldn't it? If he'd come out looking like Bonnie Langford with the big just, I don't know. It's strange. But I feel he's a bit wasted as well, because, you know, if you're going to introduce a character like that, he's another Glitz type character, isn't he? A little bit shady, not really bad.
Yeah.
You know, he's not a bad person, but he's a bit shady. And I think he's along the same line. So again, you could have, you know, get him involved in the story a bit more. Because I don't really care too much about him, but by the end of the episode, I'm slightly more invested into him, because he's sort of, talks about a deal that he's going to do 40 minutes in the future, and you think, oh, he's a funny chap, isn't he? But, you know, I'm starting to sort of like him by the end of the story, but haven't really got to know him enough. So, again, should have been brought in a bit earlier, I think.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's the theme of the story, really, because there was a couple of characters that just, they were in it way too much. There was a dude who was knocking about, I think he, what was his name? Shap, was it?
Astrid's lover, or...
Oh, no, that was Merrick. He was a bit of a wet lettuce anyway, wasn't he?
He was pointless. Yeah. Who's Shap? Which one's he?
Well, he's the one that he arrives on. You know, they go through the transmat like a billion times in the story.
Yeah.
He's one of the dudes that goes through the transmat, and he's kind of walking around, and he's got the white, looks like the end of a sort of a handheld vacuum as a gun.
And, I know what you mean.
Yeah, and there's a scene later on where Merrick's like, well, have you gone and done this? And I'd look, and he's like, rolls his eyes and he runs. He, I don't know, he's like an extra, but they've given him a bunch of lines, and so he's in every part. But he just doesn't really add any value to anything. Like, even when he encounters the Doctor, which we assume is on Zeos, they think they've gone to Zeos. They've actually gone up to that ship, haven't they, where the shadow dude is. Even when they're there and he encounters the Doctor's like, doesn't give him anything to do, doesn't tell him off, doesn't do anything. They just walk around for a bit, and then he buggers off back down to Atreos. And then he meets up with Merrick, and then they do something else. But earlier on in the story, all he's doing really is just standing next to the Marshal. So it's really weird. Like, characters like the Guardian, Drax, those sorts of characters who should have got loads more screen time, they were not really made the best use of. And then you've got other characters like this guy. I'm sure his name was Shap.
It is. I know the character you mean.
Yeah. He gets quite a few lines, but they just fall on. There's no sort of weight to anything that he's doing. He's just plodding around. And
talking about the right character, and I'm pretty sure we are. He does have an hilarious death, though.
Oh,
yeah. And he actually, I mean, I don't quite know what, I'm sure this wasn't in the script, but he's like, he shouts, is it Merrick? He goes, Merrick!
That's it, yeah.
It's a cracking death scene. I mean, it's worth having a minute just for that. That was hilarious, that bit.
Yeah, that's him.
He really goes for it. Yeah, him, yeah. I recognise him because he's in an episode of Blake 7. Playing a similar sort of character, but a bit more. He plays it a bit more comedic in Blake 7. He's an odd it's an odd performance that he gives in Blake Seven. It's a sort of more exaggerated version of this character, basically. But at least he gets something to do in Blake Seven. He's got a proper character in it.
Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, this one, he's there, and you sort of think, oh, what's his game then? Is he, you know, is he going to double cross someone? Or because he's got that sort of, he's always in the background. You feel like he's going to do something, you know, at some point. He's going to, it's going to be a big reveal or something that he's working for the Shadow or whatever. But yeah, no, he doesn't really do much at all, does he? He gets quite concerned about the Marshal. He's like, he's sort of talking to him, but the Marshal's zoned out. so he gets a few of those scenes. But yeah, apart from his death scene, he doesn't really do anything.
Yeah. Barry Jackson, he was in Blake 7 as well, apparently.
Barry Jackson. I recognised him, but I couldn't think. I can't remember what part he plays in. I thought he might have been.
Yeah, and he's also, Barry Jackson's also, he was in one of the exclusive clubs as well. So one of those... So a lot of classic Doctor Who actors were in other shows, and there's three shows in particular, the Holy Trinity. Like, if you're in all three, then you're in the exclusive club outside of Doctor Who, and that was Blake Seven, Zedcars, and Dixon of Dot Green.
Oh, yeah, Dixon of Dot Green.
If you're in all three of those, then you're in an exclusive club, and Barry Jackson was one of those.
I'm trying to work out who he was in Blake Seven, because I knew I recognised him, but I can't think whatever, because I recognised the other guy, Shap. I recognised Shap straight away, David Harris. I was like, oh, he was in Blake 7, but I knew I recognised Barry Jackson. I just couldn't place him at all. But Marek, is it then? The wet lettuce. Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
I forgot he was in it. He suddenly pops up in like episode 5 and he's got a bandage around his head. And I'm like, who is this guy?
Yeah. Yeah, we get it, mate. You fancy Astra. All right.
She's not interested.
She clearly doesn't want anything to do with you, buddy. So move on. But yeah, and he just, yeah, he cocks up a couple of times, doesn't he? He's like, Astra, runs after her, and then he ends up falling down, whatever it is, he falls down into the void of something, lands on thin air, but he's got a massive gash on his head now, and I don't know, it's, yeah.
He could have been the worst. He could have been in the running for the worst actor in the series title, but somebody beat him to it. Somebody got the award, snatched it from under his grasp. And that is the guy who plays, thankfully he's only in episode 1, the guard who's supposed to be sort of taking care of Princess Astra, sort of walking her around right at the very start.
Oh, yeah.
And he's saying his lines like, you mustn't go in there, princess. You shouldn't be doing that, princess. I'm like, does this guy know the cameras are rolling? Is he giving any sort of sign of a performance here? Because it is one of the dullest performances I've seen on screen. He just obviously couldn't be bothered. Maybe he didn't get the part he wanted. I don't know, but he's dreadful.
Yeah, maybe he's doing a Madoc. He's like, oh, I went for Drax. And now I
wanted the ginger wig.
Yeah.
And he didn't even get that. But no, that guard guy, I mean, God, he's just so drab. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, man. I know, mate. Yeah, Michael Hayes is like, action. Comes in set. He's like, right, this is going to be a belter. I spoke to this guy earlier. He's up for it. And then he gets that cut. What are you doing?
Say the lines for some oomph, man. Yeah. Put some effort in, for goodness sake.
And then Graham Williams leans over. This is all we've got, mate. The other dudes, we've got no one else. This is this is all you've got on camera for today. Sorry, Michael. All right, roll again. Action. Right. He's warmed up. Here we go.
It's warmed up.
Don't walk there, princess. Cut.
He must have just given up.
But the thing is, back in the day, as we said many a time, a classic who didn't have enough time to do it over and over again. 5 o'clock, the lights are out. See you later. They just had to roll with it.
You see, you mentioned the director there. What was the other one? Because I recognise that Michael Hayes.
Was it the one before? Kroll? No, was it Stone? Which one? We said that he went on to do City of Death.
Oh, City of Death, that's right. Oh, yeah. he did do Android Zatara.
Oh, one before, yeah.
So, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, because we said, didn't we, that the Android Zatara and this one are just surprising, not story, but in terms of direction and sort of on-screen sort of momentum and being non-static. It's just night and day difference between these two stories from Michael Hayes and The City of Death. So City of Death, yeah, even though it's not, you know, it's not like a Michael Bay film, let's be honest, but, you know, it's miles better than these two in terms of the look of it and just how it's cut together and, you know, the energy and stuff. It's just got a little bit more spark to it, City of Death, surprisingly. Actually,
that's what this episode is, that's what this story, sorry, is missing, isn't it? Is energy. I mean, Tom, bless him, is probably the only one really that's giving it something in terms of energy. The rest of the cast, they very much just going through the motions. I mean, that's why I like Valentine Dial, because he comes in and he's just giving it something for even in the 2 minutes. He's like, oh, doctor, you were, you know, he's at least he's going for it. But yeah, the rest of them, I suppose Barry Jackson as Drax is sort of trying something. It's like, yeah, he's at least giving a bit. But and Lila Ward, obviously. But yeah, the rest of the supporting cast. I mean, what do you reckon to the Marshal? Because obviously he's supposed to be subdued, so we could sort of let him off a bit because he's supposed to be like a bit zoned out. But what do you reckon to, he's an odd character, isn't he? And what happens with him? Like, it's another character that goes nowhere, really, isn't it? He's full of rage. Yeah. He's starting the war, fire. But then, again, what actually even happens to him at the end? Does he blow up, or I can't remember?
He blows up in the ship, doesn't he?
Yeah, doesn't the Doctor blow the ship up? And
I think so.
Romana says, oh, that was a bit harsh or something. I don't know, yeah.
Yeah. It's a shame, really, because John Woodvine is a cracking actor. Over the years, he's done some really good stuff.
What's he done? Let's have a look.
Well, in terms of...
we've done a lot of theatre.
The Crown, the TV series The Crown, he's in that. He's very good in that.
He is another one of those faces that I instantly recognise but don't know where. I think, oh, I've seen him in stuff.
Yeah. Birkin here, who's really good in that. And then some other stuff that he's done over the years. Things like, where was it? Life After Life was really good. He was really good in that. Just trying to pick out a few things that I've seen. But like the list of things that he's done is huge. And the things I've seen him in, he's been really good. But I think he's only meant to be subdued at certain times. Like there's a couple of bits where that little thing on his neck kicks in and he goes into, like he's staring off into space, like he's daydreaming.
Yeah.
But when he's like, you know, the Marshal, when he's meant to be on fire sort of thing, he does scream and shout a couple of times and he kind of gets there. He's like, right, I need to go for it a little bit here because I'm not playing subdued Marshal. I'm like, you know, the shouty one.
Yeah.
He kind of does it a little bit at times, but yeah, he comes off more annoying than authoritative, in my opinion. The way he sort of kicks off at times, it's because he just sounds like a kind of spoilt little brat through a lot of it, even though you've got the Doctor saying, look, you know, you're outnumbered. Like they're watching the scanner, aren't they? The radar, and they can see like the ships that he sent up to war. I think there's like six of them. And then like the opposite side, there's like 20 ships. And they're like, we need to pull them out. He's like, no. We'll win this war. He's like, dude, what are you doing? He's like a spoiled little brat that doesn't want to lose his reputation sort of thing. And he comes across as like just petulant sort of child rather than, yeah. So
rather than authoritative, yeah.
Yeah. So again, a bit of a wasted character, really. He was all right. Don't get me wrong. His performance was pretty good. And he was all right.
He's one of the better ones in it, yeah.
Yeah, but in terms of what the character does, I mean, like you said, for the last half of the story, he's stuck in the loop anyway. So he's only he's only acting in it really for the first half. But it wasn't too bad. His performance was pretty good. But yeah, just the character itself was a bit annoying rather than kind of posing much threat, put it that way.
Talking of threat, you know you're saying there's no real threat throughout this, which I think is absolutely true. But so you get the Shadow guy comes into the story about halfway through or whatever, you know, potential there to be quite a creepy, you know, I mean, just the name suggests all the Shadow, you know, and he's got this weird skull type face, so yeah, it looks a bit creepy. But there is no threat really from him, is there? I mean, when he goes towards the key at the end, he could have done what he needed to do within seconds. It's one of those, it's a bit like the Davros pressing the red button, isn't it? He just hovers his hand over it, waiting for them to go, stop. You know, it's there's no real threat from the Shadow. He just feels a bit of a, I said earlier, a bit of a Scooby-Doo villain, because all he really does is this evil laugh a lot of the time. And he doesn't really do anything.
Yeah, I mean, he's a, why
can't he just go? I know there's a bit where he goes to TARDIS, he can't go in because of the light and stuff, but he don't half faff around trying to get in the TARDIS. I mean, there's a bit where he's got the Doctor and him having a bit of a sort of face off, if you like. He's trying to get the Doctor to go in. The Doctor's like, oh, I'm not falling for that. But, oh, yes, you are. No, I'm not. And that seemed to go on for quite a while, didn't it? But I kept thinking, but then the Doctor does go into the TARDIS. And I don't know, I found all that stuff kind of confusing, really. See, again, it just felt like they were going round in circles, like, Don't you go in that TARDIS. I am going in it. See that, all this sort of stuff.
Yeah. The Shadow could have been a really cool character. But the problem is he's too similar to the Black Guardian.
That's why I think he should have been done away with quite quickly. Like, he's just the front, you know, he's just being the puppet.
Yeah.
Let's get rid of him. Exactly. Let's bring the Black Guardian in and have a real villain. Someone who is scary, because Balanthar, it's just the voice that is scary.
Yeah. So the Black Guardian, in a way, he's kind of cool, because at the very beginning of The Key to Time, the Black Guardian disguises himself as the White Guardian, approaches the Doctor and said, I need you to do this thing for me. Go and get all the segments. At the same time, well, not the same time, but at a time, he went off to the Shadow just as the Black Guardian and said, I need you to do a thing for me. I need you to get all. So basically, he's played them off against each other. So whereas the Doctor and Romana have gone off and they've done like the treasure hunt approach, where they've gone off and proactively done everything, the Black Guardian's like, well, what I'm going to do is I'm going to get the sixth bit first, and then I'm just going to chill out. So I'm going to get that bit, and then I'm going to wait for whoever's after all of it to come and get it. I'll defeat them and get the other five parts. So he's kind of clever in that way. He's just put his feet up, had a cup of tea, waiting for the Doctor to get there. Waiting for the sixth Key to Time. So he's kind of set this whole war up, hasn't he? That's the link between. So he hired Drax to build the supercomputer that can manage the war for them, so that the war between Atreus and Zeos can happen, so that he can then get access to the princess, because she's like the sixth generation of the sixth child of the sixth something of Atreus. So he's like, right, cool, they're all going to kick off, this is going to happen, I'll be able to speak to her, she'll tell me where the sixth segment is. If she doesn't, I'll beat her boyfriend up for a bit, that'll work. So in a way, he's like a bit of a cool mastermind in a way. But the problem is, like, narratively throughout the story, he's too similar, his motives are the same as the Guardians, so there's a bit of a clash there. So he's, like you said, he's a bit of a puppet for the Guardian to use. The Guardian should have popped up sooner, got rid of him. He's like, you've served your purpose, see you later. Then it would have been a really cool showdown between the Guardian and the Doctor.
But why doesn't the Black Guardian, so he wears like a white outfit when he's on the monitor to trick them, but why doesn't he look like, was it supposed to be him at the very first story? Was sat in the wicker chair? Was that supposed to be him in disguise?
Yes, right, yeah.
So why doesn't he look like him on the scanner? Could they not get the actor back to film that? Or that seemed odd to me. Like, he just puts on a white hat and says, I'm the White Guardian, now hand it over. And I'm thinking, but, well, you don't look anything like you did when you were at episode one, which I think is supposed to be him in disguise, I don't know. There's some line about, I can look however I want or something, but didn't. That was a bit odd, I thought. It just cracks me up anyway, the way that they just turned the film to negative. He's like, oh, all right, then I am the Black Guardian now. Oh, you've guessed. Of course we guessed.
You've got me.
Yeah. Obviously just couldn't get that actor back.
No, because the Guardian was played by a guy called Cyril Luckcombe back in the Rebos operation.
Yeah.
So he was, they've just got a different actor basically to play the Guardian in this. So to answer your question, the Shadow is a good character, but I don't know, just kind of used in a strange way, because he does you know, he shouts a little bit and he's got like the evil cackle, that's all there.
Oh, he's got the cackle down to a T.
He looks a bit like Skeletor from He-Man. He's got like the typical sort of you know, outer space villain sort of thing down, really. He's pretty good in that respect, but he just gets defeated way too easily. That's what I mean. There's no real threat the other way. It's like,
yeah.
I mean, in a way, that's cool because it does kind of feed into that really good thing where, you know, in some stories where even where the Doctor's up against it, he's always got a plan sort of thing.
Yeah, it does kind of, underneath.
Yeah, it does feed into that a little bit. You can see that Tom's kind of got it under control. He knows what's going down and stuff. But from the Shadow's perspective, he's just a bit, makes a lot of noise. But he's all bark and no bite, I think, that's is the it. Best thing to, you know, the best description.
What did you think of the Doctor and Drax getting shrunk down and having cool. a little ride in K9?
That was cool, actually. I like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At first, I wondered where they were. For some reason, I must have, I don't know, zoned out or something at that bit. I'm thinking, where are they then? And it was really cool when the side panel of K9 comes open and
yeah.
and you see him in there. So, and to be honest with you, it wasn't done too badly for its time.
No, it wasn't actually. No, they step up. I thought that wasn't done bad at all.
Yeah, they're talking to K9. What did you think to him? He's had another belter of a story.
It's probably one of his, it's a good story for K9. Hmm. I mean, he's right in the thick of it. He even gets to turn evil, sort of. Yeah.
There's one bit, though, which was bloody ridiculous. And I mentioned at the beginning about this padding. So K9 goes into the supercomputer. K9 walks up to it, and it's just this.
Oh, I noticed that.
So we have that for about a minute, literally a minute. And then the computer does this for about 30 seconds. And then K9. And this all goes on for about, I don't know, about 3 minutes. And yeah. there's, what are we supposed to do as the viewer? We, you know, there's no subtitles. I don't know what they're saying. And then it's right at the end, K9 just goes out. It's like, okay.
Bye-bye. You
know, everything's cool. And then you think, bloody hell, I know you want it to pad this out a bit, but Jesus Christ.
I did think of that sound effect as well. I thought, that's Gary's sound effect they're using. It yeah, sounded just like it, didn't it?
Yeah.
I was trying to find it. I don't know if it's an Easter egg or I couldn't find it, but there's that famous outtake of Tom Baker losing his, you know, bleep at K9. Yeah. And it's in that, I know it's in that set. I remember it. He's like, oh, you don't know effing anything. He's like swearing. But I couldn't find it on the DVD.
Dude, that's actually a, he didn't actually lose his beep on that.
Oh.
Yeah. A lot of people think that, so there's quite of a, in like the last third, I suppose, filming of this story, there's like a rumour that's turned into a myth, I suppose, that Tom Baker was really difficult and he was very angry and shouty on set and stuff like that. But yeah, since then it's come out that no, he wasn't really, because the director said, no, he was actually all right. And I don't know where this has come from. And I think it all stemmed from that outtake
where
he's really straight faced and, you know, what do you beep in know and all that lot. But then it's come out, you know, that he was doing that as a joke, like when the cameras cut, you know, everyone was cracking up. And
I wish I could find it, though. I'm sure it must be on the DVD somewhere. It's definitely on one of the DVDs. I remember watching it.
It is, yeah. It's on there somewhere.
I couldn't find it, but yeah. But yeah, I know what you mean. Another great example of some computer padding.
Yeah.
That just goes on and on. I noticed the TARDIS prop is looking the worse for wear. I mean, that's another thing that's not, has only just made it through to the end of the season. I mean, the windows are smashed, the roof's all lopsided. They've lost the lamp and they've had to replace it with a stolen police car, you know, siren. It's just, what is going on?
Yeah, poor old TARDIS. There's quite a few stories over the classic era, isn't there, where it materialises on screen and you think, oh.
Show it some love.
It's a lick of paint or, well, if anything, it just needs a clean more than anything. Cause,
do you know, I remember seeing someone post, I forget who it was, it might have been Janet Fielding or somebody like that, posted a picture of the inside of the prop on Twitter or something. And it just, you could almost smell the picture. It looked absolutely vile. It was just all like, it just looked horrible.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Like damp and dirty.
Yeah, I can imagine. I'm not sure why the prop guys didn't sort of maintain it a bit better, because in some stories, when they open the doors to the TARDIS, and then they close them, the whole thing like wobbles around
it
a little bit.
Falls apart. Yeah.
Like the other week, I thought, oh, my cutlery drawer's sticking. So I got the screwdriver out and tightened it up. Job done. Why couldn't they just, you know, get the screwdrivers out and just tighten up the screws a little bit? Because you can see that over time where it's been transported everywhere and the doors have been opened like 100 times, that it's just kind of loosened up a little bit. Just get in there, tighten the screws up. It doesn't take much, really.
It generally does amaze me, because it's such a central thing to the show. It's such an important part of the show. And quite often you can see that they've sort of cobbled, because obviously there was a couple of different props made over the years. In fact, this one, I believe, is still fairly new in terms of being in the show. I think this is one of the newer TARDIS props. I always forget the name. Is it the Newbury prop? I always get confused. But anyway, it's a fairly new prop in terms of the show. But it often looks like they've just cobbled together bits from the other props as well. Like I'm pretty sure the roof is not from the actual, this particular prop at the end, because it just looks like it's been plonked on the top. And do you remember that Patrick Troughton story we watched where the roof was clearly the wrong size, so they plonked it on the top? It's probably from the hut. So yeah. It seems to me that they just, when they get the TARDIS out of storage, they just grab a couple of those blue doors. They might not be from the right box, but grab them, grab that roof, get that light. They just seem to throw the TARDIS prop together from any bits they've got to hand. It's because if you look at Survival as well, like you've got two sort of front doors, if that makes sense. Although one of them hasn't got the writing on the panel, but you can see the little handle, and you're thinking, so that's the back of the TARDIS, but it's got a little door handle. So that's like from another prop. And it just, the more you notice it, like you'll notice it a lot over the years, it just seems like the TARDIS prop is just cobbled together from every prop that they've got their hands, hand. But yeah, it does. It's starting to look a bit bad in this.
Yeah. What about old Dudders?
Well, yeah.
I've been disappointed, you know, with old Dudders music throughout this series, you know. We just had like the odd little bit here or there in each story. There's been no sort of strong themes that have popped up throughout each one, and almost like, well, to the point where it's might as well not have had any. They might as well have just got some incidental music and played that in the background. There's been like the odd little bit, like the Stones of Blood had a few bits in it.
Yeah. I mean, I love Dudley's music. I really do. But I agree. Nothing special from him in this season particularly, or this story even.
Yeah, there was a couple of bits where he could have gone to town as well, like the bit where K-9's on the conveyor belt on the way to the furnace, the bit where when the time loop is stretching and stretching, and then the segments of the key have got like smoke coming out of it, and
you know,
there's like a few like suspenseful bits where there was, I'm guessing, meant to be a bit of a build-up. You know, they could have had some cool music there. And
Even the cliffhangers don't have much to them. I mean, I also noticed that the cliffhangers change as well. So, like, when you get the reprise, so there isn't much music to sort of dramatise them. So that's, I agree with you, missing. And then you'll get like a scene of the Romana turning and going, Doctor, at the end of one episode. But in the reprise, she doesn't do it. She just turns and carries on the scene. I'm thinking, what happened there? You know, there's a lot that's done for dramatic effect in the cliffhangers, which is left out in the reprises. Like, they don't sort of match up, a lot of them. Mm-hmm. But I think the other thing that's missing is the music. Yeah, it doesn't really emphasize any of the stuff that's happening in the cliffhangers, which is
shame. Yep. Yeah. Right, what else we got? What's on the notes here?
Let's have a look at my notes. Cliffhangers different. Yeah, not a lot else, actually.
Yeah, the other thing I've got is obviously Lala Ward's performance as Astra.
I liked it. I did quite like her as Astra.
Yeah. Yeah, she is kind of cool. It's she plays that sort of in and out of, because just like the Marshall, she's been controlled.
Yeah.
And it's cool, that switch between her. There's a bit when they're in the TARDIS and the Doctor kind of knows what's going on. Like, she goes to this bit where she's daydreaming, and then she goes back to normal, and then she's daydreaming. And you can see the Doctor kind of leaning in quite a bit, and he's examining her and sort of studying how she's talking and stuff. And so that's kind of cool, that bit. And so not a bad performance from her, really. Obviously, she evolves and, you know, she gets much better as she becomes Romana too, later on in Tom's era and stuff. But in this one, she's not too bad. Yeah,
it was quite nice to see her playing another part, actually. as I said, it does make it quite interesting when she comes into it. It kind of, it made me want to watch the next one, actually. It was just to sort of see the transition. But yeah, it was a decent performance from Lala, I thought. My only other notes was one thing I really did like was that the – actually, no, sorry, question first. So before I say what I liked, question, what did you think about – so they've spent all this time gathering the parts of the key and then they just throw them into space. It does feel a bit like right, okay. My thoughts on that are – I suppose I don't know what else they could have done with them, because it does feel a bit like, oh, is that it? So you've gone through all of that just to throw them away. So, but then I'm thinking, what else could they have done? But what are your thoughts on it? And this will lead me to what I liked about it in a second. But what did you think about the sort of whole just throwing it out the window kind of thing?
In a way, for me, I kind of like that. I know it does have a kind of, it does have an aspect of, well, you know, we've spent God knows how many hours across this series to track it all down. But in a way, I kind of like it because it feeds into the very first conversation that the Doctor and the Guardian, you know, unbeknownst to us at the time, the Black Guardian has. So the Doctor is very reluctant. He's like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do it. I don't want to get involved in all this. And the Guardian's like, nope, you will do it. And he goes back in the TARDIS and he has to deal with his new companion and stuff. So it kind of, the whole thing comes full circle for me at the end. The Doctor's like, well, I didn't want to get it anyway. I didn't want to get involved in all this anyway. So, you know, beep to it all, you know, just dispersed a lot. So yes, it does have a little bit of like, is that it? After all of the time we've put in, you know, it's just going to be scattered around the universe. But I kind of like it in a way though. Yeah,
I feel the same. I was disappointed when I first watched it because I thought, well, what was the point of that? But then I agree. Watching it again, I'm thinking, yeah, there isn't really any other way they could have got around it, because they can't keep him, be all powerful then. So, yeah, they kind of had to do that. But it does lead onto something I did like, which was the Doctor then fits a randomizer to the TARDIS so that the Black Guardian could never follow him and, you know, all this sort of stuff. And I thought, oh, that's a lovely idea, that. So she says, well, where are we going next? He's like, who knows? It gives back the unpredictability and the TARDIS being uncontrollable and the fact that they, you know, they can't just go wherever they want. And I think, you know, this is something that changes a lot, doesn't it, from story to story. Sometimes the Doctor can, if he needs to land the TARDIS at an exact point, he can do it. Other times he can't. And I think it's a bit inconsistent. But I like this idea that it's just the TARDIS is, there's a little less control when they could go anywhere, they could land anywhere. So I thought that was a nice idea. But, you know, but I think in the modern series particularly, the Doctors can pretty much control it and land wherever it needs to be, sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it does take away a bit of that sort of fun, bit of, you know, unpredictability, I think.
But yeah.
It's whatever the story demands, really, isn't it?
Indeedy. Yeah. I know that we've seen the Black Guardian pop up, obviously, further on in Davison's era.
Yeah, that's right.
I think, don't we have a trilogy of stories? The Black Guardian trilogy, in fact.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Mordred Undead and Terminus and whatever the other one is. Yeah.
But it would be cool to see the Guardian again. Would to see him somehow come back.
It's a good character. Cool. Yeah, it's a good character.
Because he has the potential to really throw some problems in the you know, he's quite a powerful character in the world of Doctor Who, so it'd be good to not default to, right, we haven't seen a really powerful villain or monster in a while, let's just default to the Master. It would be cool to throw the Guardian in at some point, having come back.
Yeah, I agree. I haven't really got anything else, apart from I did put a question in my notes. Was, so there's a bit where a missile's aiming at the TARDIS, and they dematerialise a split second before the missile hits. But I'm thinking, so what does the missile hit then? It's like, if it didn't hit the TARDIS, it just randomly blows up, but That didn't make sense to me. Your mate, the one that Shap, he's like, well, I think it disappeared just before the missile hit, I think I saw. And I'm like, well, if it did, what did it hit? Like, what made the missile blow up if it didn't hit the TARDIS? That didn't make sense to me.
What does it hit?
Well, it doesn't hit anything. That's what I mean. It's a bit of rubbish. The writing not very good there.
Yeah, it's a bit weak, isn't it?
Yeah, it was just a little note I made on there. I was like, well, if it didn't hit the TARDIS, then what did it hit? Because it blows up. you know, it's, in theory, it's a good idea, but, you know, doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah, true.
But then
true.
I guess what does in Doctor Who? So I'm probably being pedantic.
No, Major. Yeah. Yeah. Have I got anything else? No, I haven't, mate. Yeah, that's pretty much all of that. So, okay. Review time.
Scores on the doors.
It's, who's going first? I think it's you.
Is it me?
Think
so. I've got a feeling I'm going to be higher than you, but believe for me, this isn't a good score. So I'm giving it a 5 out of 10. Just very middle of the road. I haven't gone any lower, even though it's not great. I haven't gone any lower because I think it was still watchable, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. Like it's not Underworld. I could make it through 6 parts and, you know, didn't want to smash the TV. So it's middle of the road.
Okay.
So 5 out of 10.
A 5. Okie dokie. Yeah, it's a 5 for me, dude.
Oh, is it? Oh, I thought we'd go lower than that.
Yeah, it's a 5. It's yeah, it's definitely not a terrible watch. It's a bit like it's a bit like Kroll and to a degree Tara. It just has that kind of lacklustery feel to it. Like, you know, it just needs something just to really get it going. I think it wasted a few characters and stuff like that. So very, very average. You know, it's definitely not Tom's best work. Definitely not any of the best stories from his era, but it is watchable. It is watchable. And then what would you give The Key to Time then as a series? Because it is overall a bit of an experiment in the classic era, I suppose.
I would give it a 7 out of 10 okay. overall. But most of that is down to Tom and Mary Tam. I think, you know, if I was going to watch this again, the moments I'd be watching for would be those two together. It wouldn't necessarily be the stories particularly. Okay. You know, like if I think of season 13 and I think, oh, those stories, you know, they're just great stories. If I think of Key to Time, I don't think the stories are very strong, but, you know, there are some good bits in it, mainly down to those two. So,
right.
I'll give it a 7. Well, okay. What about you?
Yeah, for the whole lot, I'd give it a 6, I think.
A 6?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's, you know, there's some great stuff in there. Don't get me wrong. It's some really good stuff and some great ideas. And I love Mary Tam's Romana. I think she's a great companion. Very, very overlooked. But more so than anything, it's just got great potential. It never really hits.
That's very true. Yeah.
You know, just
that's
this
a good way of summing it up. That is, it does. It does have great potential that it never quite hits. Yeah.
Yeah. So there we go. A 5 from each of us on this one, and then a 6 and a 7 for the whole series. But it feels good to get to the end of it, a bit of a relief to get through, because it is a bit of a slog, dude. Let's not beat around the bush. Some of these stories are a bit of a a bit of a slog now and then. So
definitely, yeah. I will say this though: I did enjoy it more than I was expecting, even though it's been a bit of a slog at times. It's not a season I watch very often. It's not one I gravitate towards, but there is, you know, it starts off better. I think it just, once you get to Tara, I think is where, and Kral and Armageddon, it's, yeah, definitely the first half of the season is better than the second. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like the first half a lot more than I remembered, but just loses it.
Okie dokie. Right, well, that's our scores. What did our awesome listeners think? We had a few audio clips in, so let's get these guys rocking and rolling. First up from Dan Under. Sammy Satine.
G'day, Gary and Adam. Sammy Satine here. So, the Armageddon factor. This was interesting. Lala Ward is Princess Astra. Well, I feel a bit bad that she was the last segment of The Key to Time. Who was that shadow guy? The control mechanism was weird that he used to control people and K-9. Poor K-9 was nearly melted. Now I know where on the TV show the Doctor met Drax. He's in Big Finish with Tom, and I always wondered. Also, apparently, the Doctor is called Theta Sigma. That Black Guardian isn't very nice. What was controlling the Marshal? I didn't quite get that bit. Or the mirror. I give it 6 Princess Astras out of 10. Stay safe, stay healthy, keep washing those hands, wear a mask, etc. See ya.
See ya.
Yeah, there was a few bits, weren't there? Like the mirror, I didn't get some of those bits.
Yeah.
Problem is, I didn't care enough to worry. I was thinking, well, they'll get explained later, and they didn't. And I thought, oh, I don't really, not really bothered.
Yeah, and Sammy mentioned Theta Sigma. We supposedly got told the Doctor's real name, didn't we? At the time, everyone thought it was his real name, but I think it's come to light since then that that's actually the Doctor's nickname. It's not his real name. So I think in the in the Happiness Patrol, they kind of debunk that that's his real name. It's just his nickname.
Oh, right, is it? Oh, that's a shame. Yeah. I just like the fact it was thrown in there. You know, could be anything.
Theta. All right, mate.
What, Theta?
Theta Sigma. Right. Thank you very much, Sammy. Much appreciated, as always. Moving on. Is it Tom or is it Seb? Let's find out.
Hello, Gary and Adam. So, we have finally reached the final segment in the queue to time, the Armageddon Factor. It is quite sad knowing that I won't be returning to my Doctor voice anymore. And no, I'm not going to try and attempt the other Doctors because, quite frankly, I would struggle and make a fool of myself. But anyway, the Armageddon Factor, what did I think? Oh, I hate to say it, but I absolutely despise this story. Everything about it is quite bad, to be honest. I'm pretty sure I fell asleep when I first watched it. Ah, it seems quite sad to end on a downer. But six parts was just too much for me, I'm afraid. Now, stay safe, and I'll see you around one point. Oh, thank God I can finally get out of that voice.
It's probably killing Seb to do his own voice, to get through six parts of doing Tom, but not a fan of it, yeah.
I insist that he does every Doctor that we review now. Yeah. Now he started it.
You started that now, mate.
Good luck with Sil.
Yeah. Not a fan, Seb?
No.
No, shame. Moving on. This is Mr. Joe Turner.
Hi, guys. By the way, the reason why I'm whispering is because I'm recording this quite late, and I have a very busy week this week because it's my GCSE results at the end of the week. So, yeah. Anyway, the Armageddon Factor is a very convoluted story, and it's way too long, and I would think it would probably benefit from being a four-parter. The Shadow and his mutts had a really sinister and intimidating design, which added to their threat, especially through the continuous use of black and spider webs. However, it being entirely on set held back, limiting the scale and threat. Also, there was lots of great mystery with regards to the Guardians, but it went nowhere. I love K-9 in this story. He had lots of great dialogue and importance for the plot, for both the Doctor and the Shadow. Jax was an interesting character. I found him mentioning he got his lingo from Brixton very, very funny. And the twist with the Guardians was excellent. Overall, I didn't think it was quite good enough as a finale, but okay. As a result, I give this a 6.5 out of 10. Thank you, guys, and hopefully you have a great week. See ya.
6.5, nice one.
6.5, that's not a bad score.
Not bad.
Not bad at all, yeah. So good luck with your GCSE results, Joe, yes. When you finally get those. Good luck. Best of luck to you, buddy. And thank you for your audio clip, as always. And lastly, this is Mr. Martin Arnold.
The fog on the tide is all mine. I mean, the key to time is all mine, all mine.
So, Doctor, we've recovered the key. What are you going to do with it?
Well, Romana, I thought I might resurrect Christopher Eccleston's career and bring him back to Big Finish.
That's a great idea. Then what are you going to do? I'm going to disassemble the key and throw it all the way back through space and time, thus completely negating the entire storyline of this bizarre, slightly tedious plot. Look how that worked out. Overall, The Key to Time isn't bad. It just drags on, and that's the problem with this episode. It's two episodes too many. It starts off quite promisingly, quite dark, with the whole Marshall and the war and this obsession that he has, and there's clearly something going on. Then it all takes a trip into techno-babble land. K-9 goes a bit weird. The Shadow isn't a very engaging villain. And then it ends. I thought Astra was an interesting plot twist. Overall, 7 out of 10. Just don't tell the Black Guardian. Bye.
So funny.
Very well summed up, actually. Very well summed.
I love that. And we'll just get rid of the key at the end, thus negating the entire plot point for the story. Oh, Martin. So what was Martin giving it? A 7, yeah.
7, yeah. Quite generous, actually.
I was going to say, yeah, not too bad. Okay, so not terrible scores from the audio review dudes. Thank you very much, guys, for sending in your clips, as always. We had a few over on the socials, over on Twitter. Rick Moran from the Dwass says, story-wise, it's a bit of a mess. It's not the ridiculous and embarrassing mess that Stephen Moffat brought to the Matt Smith era, but it's not good. This is a story with a ridiculous amount of padding. Some examples of this are the time loop introduced in episode 4 and the shrink ray from episode 5, which just served to extend the story by a few more episodes. Production values also add to the feeling of the serial being a bit meh. It's mostly an ugly serial with sets that are very basic and don't have atmosphere or drama to cover for it. In short, it's dull, dull, dull. I give this a 2 out of 10, and that's only for Two. Tom and Mary.
Blimey.
Savage Rick. From Rick.
Savage.
Yeah, 2 out of 10, crikey. Lost on Gallifrey podcast says, it's like staring at the silence. 10 minutes after you've watched it, you won't remember a thing that's happened. I love the
that's
key
really
to time.
True, yeah. Actually.
I love the key to time, but this final story is cheap. Is a cheap, boring shame. 3 out of 10.
Mm.
Crikey Moses. Millie McKenzie, it's a bit of a muddle. K9 was great and Shap was funny. The rest is a bit mere. 5 out of 10.
Fine.
Dan Pin just starts off his tweet with a bunch of Zs. Or Zs. Yeah, we're in the UK, aren't we? Zs, yeah. Good grief, it's dull. Definitely save the worst till last. What should be a blockbuster that's epic in scale to conclude the season turns out to be a right snore fest with no budget, a real shame. I enjoy watching the Key to Time season. However, I always skip this one. What's good? Tom and Mary are great together once again. I enjoy the character of Drax, a Cockney Time Lord. A bit of fun. The actor that plays Shap feel like he should be in a Carry On film. So bad, he's good. sorry, I can't be any more positive. A 4 out of 10.
You should see him in Blake 7, Dan. He would fit right in a Carry On film.
Yeah, no apology needed, Dan. It's I think we all share some of these thoughts, buddy. So a 4 out of 10 from Dan. Our writer, Jordan Shortman, says, a strange one. On one hand, it's full of... on one hand, it's as dull as dishwater. But on the other hand, the performances make it pretty endearing. Tom and Mary are excellent as always. I'm really sad this is Mary's last story. And Lala Ward makes a brilliant first appearance. The Shadow is interesting and the Black Guardian is used well. And there is a sense of dread that weaves into the plot and the performances. I don't understand what's happening with the computer, though. And at 6 episodes, it does begin to drag. Good, but would rather have made it a 4-parter.
Yeah, without doubt.
Without a doubt, yeah. And lastly, Edward Gillooly says, there are some good ideas here with the computer running the war and the princess being the final segment, but this is a disappointing end to the season. At 6 episodes, it is one of the most padded stories I've ever seen. The time loop being notable for this. A 6 out of 10. Overall, the Key to Time season is a novel idea for a one-off series in such a long-running show where they hunt a MacGuffin each week. The season worked quite well, but it was a shame Mary Tam did not return. Overall, for the season, 7 out of 10.
Ooh.
Not too bad. And then over on Facebook, we had just a few over there when I find it. Charlie Turner says, not horrible, but doesn't work. Also, at the end, why doesn't the Doctor give the Key to Time to the real White Guardian, who I'm presuming would keep it away from the Black Guardian safe and sound? Yeah, Charlie, I think that's because there is no White Guardian. I think it was just the Black Guardian pretending to be the White Guardian. So it says, overall, the Armageddon Factor gets a 5. A definition of a mixed bag of a season as a whole for me. Thank you very much, Charlie. Alex Goddard says, incredibly underrated. Love the length, dark mystery vibe, and the Doctor doing the unthinkable of letting the Key to Time go. And it's reminded me of every series arc becoming void. But generally, a really good story. Okay.
Okay. Good.
Jeff Waddle says, most 6-part stories are good. Most 6-part stories are good, 4-part stories padded out. This one is 2 average episodes padded out to 6. The Doctor just scattering the Key to Time at the end is a fitting metaphor for the whole season being an experiment that didn't work and just seems to be a waste of time. The Shadow was more threatening when he was the Phantom Flan Flinger in Tiz Was. Tiz Was, bloody hell, you're going back a bit now, Jeff.
Actually, he's right.
The Phantom Flan Flinger.
There is definitely a similarity there.
Yeah, love it. Thank you very much, Jeff. And lastly, Toby Coleman says, I enjoyed the story. Tom and Mary were fantastic, especially when dealing with the Key. The side cast were fun, and I loved the design of the Shadow. bit confused why K-9 became evil for a bit, or why there was a third Time Lord Drax in it. Strange seeing Lala Ward not playing Romana, but she was excellent. Yeah. Loved the last scene with the Black Guardian. 7 out of 10 repeating countdowns.
Yes.
So a little bit up and downy, I think, with scores. I think for the most part, I think people just feel it's average, you know, nothing special, a bit of a disappointing end, blah, blah, blah. So, yeah, I think we're all on the same page for the most part. But it's good to see some love for it, though. It does have its fans, obviously.
Yeah, it just doesn't feel climatic enough for the final, does it? I think in some ways, I think even Kroll had a bit more, because, you know, you had the big monster on the rig and the fight. You know, this just feels like, yeah, it just limps to the end of the line, doesn't it, this one?
Kroll.
Shame.
Kroll.
Oh, cool. Get that. Oh, the
drum. Okie dokie. Right. The Key to Time can now bugger off.
It's done.
I don't know when I'm going to watch that next.
I wouldn't watch Armageddon for a long time.
But it was good.
I would watch
Stones
of Blood again. And Pirate Planet, I'd watch again. The pirate was funny.
It's a fibula. The Key to Time's done, dude. What we got next week?
Yes, let's go forward in time a bit to a Matt Smith story with Cold War.
Submarines.
Cold War. And Ice Warrior.
Yeah, I think so.
Singular.
Yeah, Ice Warrior. Yes, yeah.
Or is it Aliens? Yeah, anyway.
Who knows?
Cold War.
Oh, I'm up for a bit of Matt Smith as well after going through the Key to Time. Crikey.
Yeah. I said to you earlier, I think I've only watched this once when it aired, so I'm quite looking forward to seeing this again. I do love Matt Smith as the Doctor.
Yeah, I do. I think we said, didn't we? I think the last Matt Smith story that we reviewed, I can't remember what that was. I think we said that every single time we watch Matt Smith, we just fall in love with him a little bit more. Like, you know, every time we watch him. I think it was The Impossible Astronaut and Day of the Moon.
Yeah, which I love Matt as a Doctor. I get put off by Clara, but anyway, Cold War.
Cold War, indeed.
Give that one a go.
Yes. Okay, I think we'll wrap there, bud, for 278.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you so much for bearing with us for another week and going through all of the Key to Time series. It's been great to have you all aboard as we went through that series and this week. Thank you so much to all of you that had to sit through some of it, but hopefully you enjoyed the most of it. So thank you very much to you all for sending in audio clips and reviews and all that jazz. Next week, as Adam said, we're on to some modern Doctor Who. This is the 11th Doctor story, Cold War. So get your DVDs, your Blu-rays, your Netflix, whatever it is, get that fired up, get it watched, because we'll be asking for your reviews as always. In the meantime, head over to the website bigblueboxpodcast.co.uk. You can listen to all of our episodes on there, plus all of the reviews and articles from our writing team. Remember to subscribe to the show. There are links on the website, or just do a search in your app, whatever you listen to your podcasts on. We'd love to have you as a subscriber. That way you won't miss a show when it lands every Friday. And if you have a minute to leave us a review, that would be awesome, because it helps us out lots and lots. We're on the socials too, Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. Again, links on the website, or just do a search for us. Give us a like and a follow so we can chat Doctor Who throughout the week. We've got a free Discord server too. A link for that is on the website. Come and hang out in the Discord and chat Doctor Who. Loads of cool discussion over there. Loads of Big Finish chat at the minute, obviously, with Mr. Eccleston coming back and all that jazz. So yeah, come and hang out and chat some Doctor Who over there. Remember to check out also my co-host channel over on the YouTube, The Geek's Handbag.
Yes.
No less.
Go and have a look.
The Geek's Bloody Handbag. Yeah, there's a link to that on the website too. There's a banner on the website with Adam's little face in his spacesuit. Go and click on that.
Forgot about that profile picture.
Yeah, in all honesty, there's tons of great videos over on Adam's channel. So go and give him a sub, check out loads of the videos, get yourself comfy and settle in and watch all that stuff. And Adam's on the socials too, under the same name, The Geek's Handbag. Very, very active on Twitter and Instagram and stuff. So go and give him a like and a follow as well. So we can all be happy and chat Doctor Who. All week, every week. Until next week, though, for episode 279, my name's Gary.
My name's Adam.
And remember...